All right, so all of you have a different response to hearing those words. Behaviors, attitudes, memories, feelings, emotions, they're all different when you heard those different types of words. Some were positive and some were negative. But all of these words are associated in one way or another with starting fresh, starting anew and beginning again. Yes, all of those words that I said, New Year's resolution, change, new beginning, failures, they all have to do with that same concept of beginning again. And if everything that we set out to do turned out the way that we had planned it to go, there'd be no reason to start over again. So if you could all just be perfect, we wouldn't have to do all this again. But there is no reason why change does not have to happen, because it happens all of the time. In my 41 years of existence, new beginnings I have found are necessary. And I have seen God's mercy in some of the most tender and sweetest places begin with new beginnings. I have also learned that my failures play a part in how I approach the starting point. Did you know that when reporters had asked Edison, who's the inventor of the light bulb, how it felt to fail 1,000 times, Edison's reply was, "I didn't fail 1,000 times. The light bulb was an invention with 1,000 steps." He said, "Great success is built on failure, frustration, and even catastrophe." How do we approach change in our lives? What is your relationship, the attitude and behavior of how you perceive change in your life? Without the recognition of failure, new beginnings would merely be repeats of the same thing day in and day out. And if there's one thing that I wished I had learned as I had grown up, it is this: that failure is neither good nor bad. It is only fertile soil for new growth. It is a continual reminder that God is doing a new thing in me, in you. He is continually forming us into the image of Christ. Sometimes I know we wish that we did not need to change, that things could continue to go on just as they've had, but with different results. Well, you know what Albert Einstein called that? He called that insanity. Doing the same thing over and over, but expecting different results. Who here have tried that? Sometimes I wonder why, as humans, we believe that new beginnings won't be difficult. Why do we expect that new beginnings won't be difficult, or that they won't come to be without doing something different? There's no way around it. New beginnings require change. That is, if we are going to start to do something new that's at least transformational. Staying open to change means a willingness to be transformed. The question isn't, do we like change, but rather, are we willing to put forth the extra effort? Will we let change transition us into seeing that God is doing a new thing? Will we let change transition us from the old into the new? And that's what I'm proposing for us today. And over the month of January, Bishop Dave Musser and I are going to team teach a series called God is Doing a New Thing. Our hope and goal for this is to provide some insight into a different approach to change. Because each year, we get this awesome opportunity. And perhaps this year, we can put on some new lenses to how we view and interact with change. I'm going to be teaching the first and last in the month of January, and Dave is going to teach the beginning with a little bit of a practical application to those changes that we might perceive that God is doing in our lives. So I want you to pull out your Bibles. In a little bit, we're going to turn to Isaiah 43. So if you turn now, you'll already be there. It's the passage that Isaiah read this morning. Isaiah 43, verses 14 through 26. I want to encourage you throughout this whole month that that passage would be a staple in your life. I want you to read it, reread it, meditate on it. Let it be an invitation to discover the newness that God is wanting to do in you in this new year of 2020. And just maybe we will learn what Mary said during the Advent series we heard at the end. Mary said, "May it be unto me as you have said, Lord." I hope that is what we can say for ourselves, that whatever God has in store for us this new year, that we would allow him to come and do it. For today, we have landed, though, on the words of Isaiah, who inspired a new vision for what God was doing. Isaiah was the prophet. He was the mouthpiece for God, for the children of Israel. But I believe today he can also give us a prophetic word for what God is doing. In verses 18, he says this, "Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I'm doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I'm making a way in the desert and streams in the wasteland." New beginnings are what God specializes in. And you can't deny there's something beautiful about them. The new year, the new season, a new school year, a new friendship, a new job opportunity, and of course, a clean house that is undestroyed by children or grandchildren. But the thing about new beginnings are they do require change, a change from the way things used to be to the way we want them to be. But I want to state the obvious. When we talk about change, we often view it as pertaining to the exterior. How many of those New Year's resolutions that you have created affect the outward? Maybe you can compare them to the top four 2020 New Year's resolutions that were posted on the internet. The top four were about 50% of what people responded. They were managing your finances better, eating healthy, being more active, or losing weight. Most of these examples are living from the outside in. When asked the question, what do you want to do differently? If someone came to you and asked that question, it would be very natural for your answer to be focused on a change that has something that you do. No one sets out at the beginning of the year with hopelessness, do they? There's tons of motivation and enthusiasm and a lot of surrounding encouragement in the beginning. I can do this. Let me loose. Let me go. Does this sound familiar to the things that you have on your list? This is going to be the year that I finally do fill in the blank. At the outset, we are definitely focused on what can I do to change me? So do any of these sounds familiar? If I could just lose 10 to 15 pounds, I could fit into those pair of pants that I fit into when I was a teenager. Some of us just need to let that go. I just got to tell you. What about if I could just become more disciplined to get up earlier in the morning, my day would be stress-free? If I could just think before I react, man, my relationships would go a lot better. If I could just be more present today, right here and now, I would be worrying less about the future. If I could just, and you fill in the blank, if I could just love God and love others, everything would be okay. I'd like to propose what I think is fundamentally wrong with this line of thinking. And I'm including myself in this guilty party. When we focus on things like that, we are focusing on three distinct words. I, do, and me. I want you to pull out your bulletins, pull out the message notes. We leave a space there on purpose so that those who like to write and jot visually can do so. And I want you to write those three words on your message notes if you desire. The first word is I. The next one is do. And the last one is me. I'm going to unpack those for us, because when we approach change with that language of if I just could, we see change through the lens of I do me. The first word is I. What is possible in my own strength? What can I do to change me? I'm the one who must muster up enough motivation, perseverance, power to make this change happen. That's the I category. The second word is do. What do I need to be doing? What on the external do I do to provide this change? What can I do to change me? If I just do something, change will automatically occur. And that third word is me. What in me needs changing? What can I do to change me? If I can just muster up enough strength and do something, I can change into a better version of myself. This self that everybody else wants me to be. This change will be a reflection on me, on how I've changed or how I've accomplished something, how I have evolved into a better person. Now, the funny thing about those three words, the I, do, me, is they sound strangely similar to the toddlers I raised who said, I do it, me do it. Did your kids ever say that? No, let me help you because I don't want this to be a mess. No, I want to do it. Let me do it. I heard that over and over. Children are notorious for demanding that they do in their own strength what they are trying to create for themselves. It's really cute as kids. It's really cute because they're trying out their new autonomy, their ability to prove themselves, their validity in the community that they live in. It's not so cute as you get older. And this way of approaching change has more serious ramifications for us when we can't seem to make the change, when we hit roadblocks, or when the pace at which we wish to change, we want to change, doesn't happen fast enough. So I want you to take a moment and reflect, because I'm pretty sure it's very natural for the human condition to have this kind of mindset. I find myself guilty of that as well. And I want to ask you, how is it going? How is it going? Have you been successful in approaching change like that? If I could just do something, I would become something different. How long do those New Year's resolutions last? In fact, I had a New Year's resolution a couple years ago that I spent quite a bit of money on. I won't tell you that it was an exercise equipment that I just sold this past year for less than half of the price. So that's how my New Year's resolutions have gone. But let's take this out of the context of the New Year's resolution and place the question into our everyday lives. Where are the areas that you have been desiring change to occur? Where are the areas that the Spirit of God has been nudging you in? What's God's been speaking to you about? And how is it going? How is that change going? Have you been successful in being obedient to God? Now, I just want to preface this whole conversation with the fact that this is not meant to shame us. This is not meant to shame us. In fact, I hope that we can lift any amount of shame that we have placed on ourselves or that others have placed on ourselves because we are not changing into who God desires us to be. Because when we approach change from the perspective of what can I do, we uncover results that are futile and filled with hopelessness. And at some point, we begin to see a pattern that screams for our attention. And if we dig deeper into it, we realize that we've bought into a lie that is from the pit of hell itself. At some point, we begin to say, what's going on? Why can I not do what I want to do? In fact, I think the Apostle Paul said something similar to that. Why am I not becoming the person that I want to be? A statement that I have found reverberating in the back of my mind before is, what am I doing wrong? Because I usually try to solve the problem, figure out the issue, and of course the steps at which I need to go about to achieve the results that I want. And a wise person once told me, you're asking the wrong question. It's not what am I doing wrong, but rather what is God doing right? Now I want to repeat that again. I want you to repeat it with me. What is God doing right? So let's repeat that. What is God doing right? When focusing on self, what am I doing, rather than focusing on God, shame will undoubtedly show up. And it wasn't until this year that I realized that I had this propensity towards shame and failure, and it was directly linked to my focus on I. And of course, that's why I felt this shame, because I couldn't live up to the statutes of which the law demands perfection. And someone needed to step into my mess and tell me, I give you permission to fail. I give you permission to fail in the sense of achieving change based on my own efforts. And I give you permission to see failure and the need for change as an avenue to let God reign in your life. So now I'm learning to give myself permission to fail and ask the question, what is God doing in me? And I know now that when I approach change and when I'm not doing it fast enough or I'm not becoming who I desire to be, when I focus on the I and shame, it's a focus on self. Because remember, the enemy of your soul doesn't care which side of the trench you're on, whether it's thinking too low of yourself or thinking too prideful. Both are obsessions with self, and both will kill any chance of transformation that God is desiring to do within you. So this is the backdrop to the words of the prophet Isaiah. Essentially, in these words, there is a shift off of self and onto God. Forget about what happened. Don't keep going over old history. Be alert. Be present. I'm about to do something brand new. It's bursting out. Don't you see it? There it is. I'll make a road through the desert, rivers in the Badlands. And if you look at that verse, you'll see that there's a bunch of language shifts in this passage. Off of self and on to God. What you did before is not as important as what I'm doing now, God says. Now, it's not because remembering history isn't important. Remember, they got themselves into this mess, and we'll look at that in a little bit. It's not even that it's not good to look at what God has done, but he's saying, I'm doing something even better. The other language shift is, I'm going to do the impossible. There's not any language of you do the impossible. It's God who does it. And when Isaiah spoke those words to the people, Their context was a bit different than ours. We sit here today as free Americans with the liberty to gather together as a church body. The Israelites were in captivity to the Babylonians. They were foreigners under the reign and rule of someone else who oppressed them. Perhaps those who are seeking asylum in the United States could understand a little bit of what it might have felt to be under this oppressive rule when the prophet Isaiah spoke these words. But for us today, we hear these words, but I don't want you to be sorry for them, and you'll see why in a little bit. Because in fact, God had warned them about the place that they had found themselves in. It was this repeated cycle over and over of neglecting God, suffering the consequences, crying out to God, and that God would save them again. And over they found themselves in this cycle. And so the prophet Isaiah spoke these words, and when he did, I can imagine that it must have felt to them like a new beginning. Because day in and day out, they kept repeating the same cycle, sort of like Groundhog Day all over again. But Isaiah says, God is going to step into your mess. The mess that you created, he will step into it. And follow along in verse 14 where he says, this is what the Lord says, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. For your sake, I will send to Babylon and bring down as fugitives all the Babylonians in the ships in which they took pride. I am the Lord, your Holy One, Israel's Creator, your King. This is what the Lord says. He who made a way through the sea, a path through the mighty waters, who drew out the chariots and horses, the army and reinforcements together. And they lay there, never to rise again, extinguished, snuffed out like a wick. God says, I did that. Remember the Exodus story? I'm the hero there. And he says, forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Not just how you got into captivity, not just how I rescued you, but get your eyes on me because I'm doing something even greater. He says, I am making a way in the wilderness, streams in the wasteland, the wild animals, they honor me, the jackals and the owls, because I provide water in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. To give drink to my people, my chosen, the people that I formed for myself, that they may proclaim my peace, my praise. You can see here from how God is speaking through the prophet Isaiah that he wants them to start asking the right question. Their dilemma, being in bondage to the Babylonians, is directly related to the fact that they were asking the wrong question. They were in captivity for one reason and one reason only. They took their eyes off of God and they placed it on themselves and what they wanted. And one of the main jobs of the prophets who entered in was to remind the people of who God was and what he had done and what he will do. And so he says, just in case you forgot, it was I who made the way, who rescued you. But he says, forget all of that, for I am about to do something even better. See, Isaiah is reminding them that God will be the one to rescue them from the hands of the Babylonians. He says, I'm going to do the impossible. I know your situation in which you find yourselves today seems impossible. But I'm going to create a way where there is no way. And you can see God's humor that he uses the very waterways that the Babylonians used for profit against them, to show forth their pride and God's glory. But God leaves his harshest words for his own people. This is where I want you to pay attention. If you are finding yourself asleep right now, wake up, because these words are for us today. He says, "Yet you have not called on me." What he's saying is, you are not looking at me. You are not coming to me. Your eyes are not on me. It's sort of like when you've seen a friend really struggling. Imagine for a moment someone dear to you, whether it's a family member or a friend, that has been really struggling, and you reach out to them and you say to them tenderly, in the most tenderly way, "I've been through that. I know what you're going through. If you need any help at all, if you just want to have some comfort or commiserate, or if I can share any bit of experience of wisdom, please call on me. I'm here for you. I'll share whatever I have to offer." But they never text. They never call. They never set up an appointment to get together with you. And you find yourself heartbroken, maybe in tears, sitting on the sidelines while you watch your friend or loved one go through the very thing that you had already experienced and could share a little bit about. Imagine it must have been a little bit what God had felt. "Why hadn't you called out to me?" he said to his children. "I've done all these miracles. I've shown my love. I've shown my faithfulness to you in your life. Why haven't you called out to me?" In verse 22, he says, "You didn't call out to me. Jacob, you have not wearied yourself for me. You haven't gone out of your way to seek me," is what he's really saying. "You've not brought me sheep for burnt offerings, nor honored me in your sacrifices. I haven't burdened you with all kinds of offerings like the other gods have done. And yet you have not brought me any fragrant calamus for me, or lavished on me fat of your sacrifices." God's saying to them, "Why haven't you come? Why have you not come like a father to his children, pleading for their safety? I've been here all along. I've been waiting for you to call me. I've been asking and calling." How many of a parent have sat with that feeling? You weren't created to go out into the battle alone, on your own strength. But you were created to come to me, God says. "For I am the one who holds the victory in the battle. I am the one who holds the power for the change that you desire." I can just hear the Father's words saying something like that. And today, in our first message on this attitude and approach to change, of God is doing a new thing, I want us to focus on God and what he is doing. I want us to get our eyes off of ourselves and on to God. Because if we really do desire a new beginning, it will require change. It will require a different approach to it. Our eyes must be fixated on God and what he is doing. Not what I may be doing or what I want to do. All too often, when we find ourselves looking at change, we find ourselves struggling and not knowing why. We've applied every practical solution to our problem. Raise your hand if you feel like at times you have applied everything that you could think of. You've tried different techniques and methods, but you end up either frustrated or giving up. And if we're honest with ourselves, it's probably because we have approached change with this mindset of I do me. So at the beginning of this new year, I would like us to change our language. Language creates culture. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but how are you speaking to yourself? And how are you speaking to others? What is God doing in me is a better way to approach it. With this kind of language, there isn't room for Satan to come in with shame. No, there's only an invitation to partake into what God is already doing. And if we're in tune with the Spirit, we will realize that what God is doing is to our betterment. Whatever He is doing is much better than what I am trying to do. And at the end of the month, when I come back again and speak, I'm going to spend a little bit more time unpacking the part that we play. But for the very beginning, I think it's enough of a hurdle for us to begin to approach change in a different way by changing our language. We must allow God to do what He wants to do. We must become living sacrifices. But for today, our first step is this: to posture ourselves at the feet of Jesus. So when you find yourself creating the New Year's resolution, when you find yourself creating a list of the things that you desire to see changed in the new year, before you go about setting out the action plan of how you're going to do this, I want you to sit before the Lord and ask Him, Lord, what are you doing in me? What are you desiring from me? And if we can collectively do this together, I think we'll approach change much differently. So I'm asking you to do a little bit of a spiritual discipline. It's a consistent practice that opens us up to the grace of God. Remember, a spiritual practice isn't the miracle or the power or the grace. It's just the platform through which we receive that. And so each day when you wake up, ask yourself, what is God doing today? What is God doing in me? What do I need to be attuned to? The scripture says, do you not perceive it? Well, why did He say that? Because they weren't perceiving it. So we need to open ourselves up to what is God doing. So commit yourselves to these three lines. What is the new thing God is doing? Where is God at work? What is God speaking to me about? I get really excited when I think about new beginnings. I get really excited about thinking about the potential of what God could do. But I know that I need to approach it in a much different way. I want the yoke of God, which is light and full of freedom. I don't want the yoke of man or the enemy that is heavy and laborious and unattainable.